Welcome back. 3:37, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. And joining me now, Jennifer Harper from Inside the Beltway. Happy Friday.
Well, happy Friday to you too, Andy Parks.
Mm-hmm. Obama salutes Irish Americans.
Yeah, don't you love this? You know, if our listeners are curious, you can look at the water cooler at the Times website today. President Obama is actually officially recognizing March as Irish American Heritage Month. And it's just amidst all of the pandemonium that has gone on today, what with the Vulcan mind meld and everything else, at least the president has stopped to recognize Irish Americans for their Heritage Month. And it's an interesting little statement. He says the Irish endured prejudice and stinging ridicule, but throughout it all, these new citizens never gave up on an old idea that anyone can write the next great chapter in American in the American story. In time, what it meant to be Irish helped define what it means to be American.
That's right.
I thought that was interesting.
That's
and
very,
there
very
is.
Good. That's very, very good, knowing that the Irish actually came here legally and contributed to society and did it the right way. You know, I mean, doesn't anyone know the message that he's sending here? You know, the Irish did it. They're such a great part of society today. They've made wonderful contributions to America. Yes, Mr. President, that's right. And they did it the right way. The people coming in today are doing it the wrong way.
Oh, well, faith and begorra. Anyway, yeah. It's Irish American Heritage Month, and the White House says so. So there you go.
Well, I mean, you know, that's wonderful. But, you know, there's a backdoor message, and we all know it, coming from this guy. All right, the sequential sequester ends up as just dumb.
Well, it is interesting. I have followed along, just as you have, the incredible drama or lack thereof today. Love the remark about the president possibly having a mind meld with somebody. But it's interesting to know, we talked about this at least for 2 weeks, Andy, that the whole sequester thing has been an incredible dramatic tableau for the White House. And we went from all the blame game to the fear game to the scare tactics. And always, as you've pointed out relentlessly and faithfully, the Republicans are always the culprits. And there were never really all the facts presented for the public. No, you know, we don't know if it's scary or not. But in the end, in the very end, the president, at the end of his big press conference today, said this is not going to be the apocalypse. It's just dumb. And that is what he said after all of this. And meanwhile,
well, why did he invent the dumb thing then?
Yeah, I know. And meanwhile, Organizing for America, that is his grassroots movement headed by Jim Messina, his former campaign manager, they've already launched a public petition to carry on about how bad the Republicans are. So it's interesting that this script just keeps on going, Andy.
Yeah, I hope they keep doing this. I hope they pound the Republicans every single day all the way to November 2014. I hope they're relentless, and I hope they get so much coverage that the American people get sick and tired of it, because they should.
Well, you have to watch how much showbiz you put out at once, or else the audience...
Yeah, well, they learned that. They learned that earlier in the week. All right, the Andrew Breitbart Journalism Awards now underway. I can't wait.
Yeah, this is interesting. Today is, as a lot of folks may know, this is the first anniversary of the passing of Andrew Breitbart, the great media pioneer. And, you know, he died very unexpectedly of a heart event on a sidewalk in Los Angeles a year ago today, only 43 years old, and left a wife and four kids. But a huge media legacy, Breitbart.com and all of the scribes and pundits and everyone else that comes from there. Very interesting. Well, they have journalism awards. A lot of people don't know this, and they are looking for nominations. Anyone can send in a nomination. You can send in one. Ann can send in one. I could send in one for a journalist or blogger who's kind of honoring the Mr. Breitbart's truth and kind of a relentless seeking of truth. And
yeah. Well, there's got to be four or five journalists out there that tell the truth about something.
Well, they're trying anyway. But if you're curious about this, it's BreitbartAwards.org. You can go, and it's all online. And indeed, they have, this is the Heritage Foundation and another group up in Pennsylvania that are sponsoring these awards. They are serious journalist awards. And interesting. And, you know, we think of Andrew Breitbart today because he definitely was a cultural and political force and a pretty interesting man all around.
Mm-hmm. All right, the Snell factor in politics.
Yes, we love this. There's a poll for everything, Andy, and we talked about this a little earlier in the week. Public Policy Polling, which is kind of a left-leaning pollster, and they normally cover the horse race, lots and lots of local races and lots of finger-pointing at Republicans. But meanwhile, they decided to discover what foods and what fast foods and what pizzas and all this kind of stuff that Democrats and Republicans like. So interesting that they put this out during a week of great partisan strife. Well, there is one thing, one little thing that Democrats and Republicans agree upon. Neither one of them will eat snails.
Huh. How about that?
How do you like that? And they won't eat caviar either. 7 out of 10 members of both these parties said they would not eat snails, and similar numbers said they will not eat caviar. But you come to sushi, Andy, and there's a partisan difference. 2/3 of Republicans would not eat sushi. And less than half of the Democrats also say the same thing.
Yeah, I like sushi, but that's just me. You know, I know a lot of people have an aversion to it. That's fine. That's fine. caviar, I'll eat caviar. I mean, I don't. It's not like I'm going to parties where it's served all the time, and I certainly wouldn't buy the stuff on my own, but I have had it before. And escargot, that's all right. That's all right.
Really? Oh, I'm not a snail person myself. I did eat it once, all done up, grenoblas, which is garlic and butter and blah, 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 with lots of good bread, and everybody was carrying on about it, but I'm still like, wait a minute, I'm eating a snail. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've eaten snake. Have you ever eaten rattlesnake?
No. No, I don't
Very
plan
tasty.
On it.
Very tasty.
It tastes like chicken, right?
Well, sort of. You know, it's got sort of that texture. Alligator. You ever had alligator?
I have not. Scaly things are not on my culinary hit parade.
Uh-huh. Okay. Just curious. All right. 6 out of 10 Americans say the U.S. should be the world's top military power.
Yeah, these are definite numbers we need to pay attention to. And this is coming out of a Gallup poll that was released yesterday, Thursday. And 62% of U.S. adults say it is important that the U.S. be number one in the world on a military level, 80% of Republicans, of course, and even 48% of Democrats agree on that. But interesting about the perceptions among all that. About 53% now say the U.S. is the world's leading military power. That's what the perception is now. And 53% of Republicans and 55% of Democrats agree with that. And also interesting to note that 46% now say the U.S. is only one of several leading powers around the world.
Yeah, that's very sad in my mind because I remember hearing studies from 20 and 30 years ago where those figures were far higher than what they are now. It was like 80% plus of Americans thought that the U.S. had to be the world's superpower.
Yeah, and I think people need to, and particularly the White House, may need to revisit the whole peace through strength idea.
Yeah, how's that working out?
For decades, and could possibly work again.
Yep. All right, and finally today, the Bible begins on the History Channel Sunday. I know they've been promoting this a great deal.
Yeah, it is a very interesting show. This is coming from Roma Downey and her husband, Mark Burnett, and he's the guy that's all behind Survivor and The Voice and lots of other reality shows, and this is a very ambitious 10-hour, 5-part epic. It's devoted to both the Old and New Testaments. And interestingly enough, they talked a little about some of the computer-generated effects in this particular program. And again, it's on 5 different Sundays. It ends on Easter Sunday. And they show Jesus walking on the water, but from what the fish see. So imagine what that is. There's a little picture of that in Inside the Beltway today if you want to get a load of a different take on the Bible. It's an interesting image, and Variety of all places says because of Hollywood's reputation as a liberal hotbed, antagonistic towards traditional values, the promise of approaching religion with reverence and greater scope than that offered by often more narrowly focused Christian films potentially has a sizable built-in audience. Interesting to note, and something to bears watching, I think.
All right, very good. Okay, have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday afternoon.
Yes, indeed.
All right, Jennifer Harper from Inside the Beltway, 346, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. Stay tuned. On the way, Phil Kirpin, President of American Commitment. We're going to talk about the sequester and a couple other things that happen to be driving us both nuts in the government right now.